Brahmate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 23, Maharaj Prithu's Going Back Home. Text number 29. Maitreya Vacha Stuvatishu Amarastrishu Patilokam Gata Vadhu Yam Va Atmavidam Durya Vainya Prapa Achyuta Ashrayaha Maitreya Vacha Stuvati Svamarastrishu Pati Lokam Gatavadho Yamba Atma Vidam Durya Vainya Prapachutashrayaha Maitreya Uvacha Stuvati Svamarastrishu Pati Lokam Gatavadho Yamba Atma Vidam Durya Vainya Prapachutashrayaha Maitreya Vacha Stuvati Svamarastrishu Pati Lokam Gatavadho Yamba Atma Vidam Durya Vainya Prapachutashrayaha Vaishnavis. Word meanings, Maitreya Vacha, the great sage Maitreya, continued to speak. Stuvatishu, while glorifying. Amarastrishu, by the wives of the denizens of heaven. Patilokam, the planet where the husband had gone. Gata, reaching. Vadhu, the wife. Yam, where. Va, or. Atmavidam, of the self-realized souls. Dorya, the topmost. Vainya, the son of King Vena. Pritu Maharaj. Papa, obtained. Abchuta Ashrayaha, under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation. The great sage Maitreya continued speaking. My dear Vidura, when the wives of the denizens of heaven were thus talking amongst themselves, Queen Archi reached the planet which her husband Maharaj Prithu, the topmost self-realized soul, had attained. Please repeat. The great sage Maitreya continued speaking. My dear Vidura, when the wives of the denizens of heaven were thus talking among themselves, Queen Archi reached the planet which her husband, Maharaj Prithu, the topmost self-realized soul, had attained. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. According to Vedic scriptures, a woman who dies with her husband or enters into the fire in which her husband is burning also enters the same planet her husband attains. In this material world, there is a planet known as Patiloka, just as there is a planet known as Pitriloka. But in this verse, the word Patiloka does not refer to any planet within this material universe, for Prithu Maharaj, being the topmost amongst self-realized souls, certainly returned home back to Godhead and attained one of the Vaikuntha planets. Queen Archi also entered Patiloka, but this planet is not in the material universe, for she actually entered the planet which her husband attained. In the material world also, when a woman dies with her husband, she again unites with him in the next birth. Similarly, Maharaj Prithu and Queen Archi united in the Vaikuntha planets. In the Vaikuntha planets, there are husbands and wives, but there is no question of their giving birth to children or having sex life. In the Vaikuntha planets, both husbands and wives are extraordinarily beautiful, and they are attracted to one another, but they do not enjoy sex life. Indeed, they consider sex not to be very relishable, because both husband and wife are always absorbed in Krishna consciousness and in glorifying and chanting the glories of the Lord. According to Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, a husband and wife can turn the home into a place as good as Vaikuntha, even while in this material world. Being absorbed in Krishna consciousness, even in this world, husband and wife can live in Vaikuntha simply by installing the deity of the Lord within the home and serving the deity according to the directions of the Shastras. In this way, they will never feel the sex urge. That is the test of advancement in devotional service. One who is advanced in devotional service is never attracted by sex life. And as soon as one becomes detached from sex life and proportionally attached to the service of the Lord, he actually experiences living in the Vaikuntha planets. In the ultimate issue, there is actually no material world. But when one forgets the service of the Lord and engages himself in the service of the senses, he is said to be living in the material world. Omaganatamyandasha Janan Anjana Shanakaya Chakshur Umminitamina Tasmaye Sri Gurvenama Sri Tetanamano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So I would request the mercy of the senior Vaishnavas that I might say something pleasing to you and to Srila Prabhupada and all the devotees. Today is also Shivaratri, and I didn't know that till this morning it was announced. So I'm prepared to speak on the Bhagavatam verse, but it's important that we should also glorify Lord Shiva. He's explained to be the greatest of the Vaishnavas, and perhaps briefly we can recall a verse that Prabhupada quotes in the Madhya Lila 5.23, where it's explained that Lord Shiva told Durga, although the Vedas recommend worship of the demigods, worship of Lord Vishnu is topmost. However, Lord Shiva instructed his wife, above the worship of Lord Vishnu, amazing, above the worship of Lord Vishnu is rendering of service to the Vaishnavas who are related to Lord Vishnu. So we're all very fortunate to be either living or visiting the Dham, where there's so much opportunity to serve the topmost Vaishnava, Srila Prabhupada, as well as all of his followers and his mission, and all of our fellow Vaishnavas. And in this way, we can remember this most important instruction given by Lord Shiva, and thus glorify Lord Shiva and worship Lord Shiva by following his instructions to always serve the Vaishnavas, render service to the Vaishnavas, today especially on Shivaratri and in the future. That would be the best service, the best glorification of Lord Shiva. So today's verse, today's verse, Maitreya is explaining to Vidura that Prithu and his queen Archie both attained Vaikuntha. Srila Prabhupada makes many interesting points in the purport. It's interesting, sometimes you prepare to give a class and then as you're reading it in the class you think, well, I could have talked about that too, or how come I didn't talk about that? But we'll look at it from a few different angles. So Srila Prabhupada makes multiple points. One thing that's interesting is he begins quoting according to the Vedic scriptures. And I think it's worth if the wife dies with the husband, or if she enters the fire with him, just like we have the history of Gandhari, when Dhritarashtra finally left home, went to the forest, and then performed so many austerities, and he gave up his life, and she herself built the fire in the middle of the forest with no one there and entered into it. So there's many histories of great, great queens like that. So it's explained according to the Vedas, when a woman does that, she attains, as Prabhupada points out, the same planet. But it's also important for us to understand, because I think many times we become confused when we hear the term Vedic, when Prabhupada refers to the Vedic period, and sometimes it's a little confusing. Well, if it's Vedic, then we're supposed to do it. And it's essential for us to understand there's a difference between Vedic and Vaishnava. There's a lot of things in the Vedas that we don't do, and there's a lot of things in the Vedas that aren't appropriate for this particular age. So we have to discriminate. We are first Vaishnavas more than we are Vedic followers, because the Vaishnava philosophy and teaching is the Siddhanta, or the perfection of the Vedas. Perfection means, just like with milk, you boil it, gets thicker, 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 and you get the essence. So in the same way, the Vedas, what's the essence? That's what we're trying to understand. So just like when you make ghee, you cook it, cook it, cook it, but you put some things aside to get the ghee. It's not that all of those things have use in getting the ghee. So we want the ghee. We want to understand what's the essence. And Vedic and Vaishnava is not always the same. There's many instructions in the Vedas that we have to be a little practical and reasonable and follow the footsteps of our previous acharyas and understand that they're not necessarily one for this age or number two for Vaishnavas. And some of those are pointed out rather clearly. I think three come to mind. Specifically, it says, in this age, no horse sacrifices. So sorry, if you think you'd like to do a horse sacrifice, it's not bona fide. You may say, no, it's in this place in the Vedas, this place, this place, this place, sorry. You have to come back a few more births, different yuga, then you can do a horse sacrifice. Similarly, it's described that in this age, one, the brother, the wife, if a brother dies, it's not appropriate for the brother to impregnate the wife. Not quite sure where that particular one is pointed out, but it's there. Yeah, I'm not sure why, though, why of all the different things. And then the third one we always hear is don't take sannyas. So we're sitting here with so many illustrious sannyasis, great preachers, servants of Prabhupada. So either you're avedic or there's something else for us to understand. So those are rather clear, although interestingly, when one understands the Siddhanta, then you can take sannyas. Right? That's what we understand. The principle behind that is you have to understand what the purpose is. And other things that are Vedic compared to Vaishnava, they're not so clear. Just like I was a brahmachari for 10 years, and I remember I was a little confused when I started reading the duties of brahmacharis in the 7th canto. And I thought, I don't know if I can do this tree bark stuff. Because if you're Vedic and you're brahmachari, all of you should go out, and of course the environmentalist might stop you first. But to truly be a brahmachari, according to the Vedas, even the Bhagavatam, which is our shastra in particular, you should go take off that nasty cotton and go find a tree and strip the bark and dress yourself like that. Of course, we probably wouldn't let you in the temple if you tried to do that. And, of course, it wouldn't be appropriate. Although it's, quote, Vedic. In fact, it actually would hurt our preaching. I can imagine, you know, at least in the West, headlines, you know, epidemic of Hare Krishnas being arrested for destroying city park trees. You know, no, it's Vedic, said Vishnu Das as he was hauled away with a scantily dressed piece of bark wrapped around his body. So we have to understand a little bit, even for our preaching, especially for our preaching, the key is, What's appropriate for this time, for this place, and what's it really mean to be Vaishnava? So similarly, this idea of sati, it comes up a few times. So, you know, usually you read these kind of things and you think, well, everybody understands, but sometimes not everybody understands. So I get the verse, so a couple comments. However, it may have been applied in the past, it simply does not apply today. It just simply does not apply today. In fact, in India, not too long ago, it was outlawed by the British. They did some good things. They did some bad things. This is one of the good things they did. Why was it outlawed? Because it was terribly abused for a certain period of time. Why was it terribly abused? Because somebody said it's Vedic, and therefore you should do it, as opposed to what's the purpose behind it? What's the principle behind it? What's the ultimate? If it's Vedic, that means it's to help uplift us. It's not meant to abuse us or anybody else. So the real question for us in these kind of context is what's the principle to be applied? And what are we meant to learn from it? And how do we apply it? Just as we know, Prabhupada told us in many different situations, he said, don't try to imitate. He said about himself, he said, don't try to imitate me. Don't try to imitate the great, great acharyas. They're very powerful. They can do things we can't do. Don't try to imitate, but try to follow in their footsteps. So that means trying to understand what's the principle. What's the deeper meaning behind what's being taught, what's being done? What was the earlier teaching in the earlier age in some instances? And how do we apply that to this day and age? So in this context, you know, it seems the principle is that wives should be very, very dedicated to their husbands. That's the principle. These ladies that took their lives, it wasn't because somebody threw them into the fire. They loved their husbands so much, and it's practically impossible for us to understand that degree of devotion in this age. They loved their husbands so much, for them it was more painful to live than to die. So they'd rather die. That's not grabbing somebody saying it's your duty to die with your husband, as was going on, unfortunately, for a certain period in the past. But they were willing to sacrifice. So what's the principle? The principle is a wife should be so dedicated to her husband and her family and her children that she's willing to sacrifice herself or her needs or her selfish interest for the needs of her husband, her children, her family members, and others. And we can see if that principle is applied, not it's not the only one, certainly, but if that principle is applied, what beautiful families we would have. And instead we see, unfortunately, in the modern day society all around the world, people in India now, it's happening more and more, people, they don't understand that principle of self-sacrifice, women or men in Grahastha Ashram. So they, instead of marrying and doing whatever needs to be done to help the other person be happy, they divorce, as Prabhupada commented many times, out of self-interest. You used to be beautiful, I wanted to be with you, now you're not so beautiful, I'll leave. You used to be rich and powerful, now you're not so rich, now you're not so powerful, so I'll leave. So a complete perversion of that. And oftentimes we see people, even if there's children involved, the adults will think, well, I need to be true to myself and I need to do what's good for me. When traditionally, the principle, traditional principle, the moral principle is, let me sacrifice for the children. But today it's, well, the children will just have to cope with it because I need to do what's right for me. So it's very unfortunate. So again, what's the principle? And if we look at this principle carefully, we see within our own hearts, sometimes we try to understand the principle, and then it becomes very easy to see what you should do to apply the principle. What's harder to do is to see what I should do to apply the principle. That's when we're really beginning, I think, to make some spiritual advancement. When we understand the principle in terms of what it means to me, and not that I'm so quick to find what others aren't doing. Just like in this context, talking about Archie and her husband and her ultimate sacrifice, sometimes we see, even in our movement, sometimes, especially in our movement, or not so much the outside world, they don't know these things, but sometimes a husband will demand, or sometimes we have this culture, we think this is normal, the husband will demand that my wife must be like Archie. You're my wife, you should be like Archie. Look how selfless she was. You should be like Sita, or Sati, or somebody. You should be just like them. That's the principle. But the question that should be asked, well, so then you should be like Ram. And you should be like Prithu. And if you're like Prithu, then I can try to be like Archie. Of course, someone could say, yeah, but even Ravan, his wife, but, you know, that's another story. Ravan is not our model. Our model is Prithu. So the principle is, both husband and wife should be trained as humble Vaishnavas, willing to sacrifice for each other, for their children, and for others, and for society. That's the principle. And here, talking a little bit about Grahastha life, we'll broaden that a little bit later, but the principle is a very important one. And I remember the story of devotee, I think I've told it here before, but it's appropriate, where Prabhupada, some man had just got married, he was on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada, and he asked Prabhupada, what is the meaning of Grahastha Ashram? What should I do? And Prabhupada said, meaning of Grahastha Ashram is before you take prasad, you should go to the door and call out three times, is anyone hungry? Is anyone hungry? Is anyone hungry? And the devotee was rather bewildered. And he thought, Prabhupada didn't understand the question. So he kind of got his courage up, and a little later in the walk, or maybe later that morning, I think it was during the same walk, he again asked Prabhupada the same question. Prabhupada, What does it mean now that I'm a grihasta? What is my duty? Prabhupada said the same thing. Before you take prasadam, go to the door, call out three times, is anyone hungry, anyone hungry, anyone hungry? Again, what's the principle? Prabhupada was using a vivid example, but was hoping we'd all be intelligent enough to understand what's the principle. That you should use your life, now you're grihasta, you have a duty to care for others. Not to just feed your own belly. How's the rest of the world doing? How's your wife doing? How's your children doing? How are other people's doing? And I'll just give an example that I was earlier this year in our temple where I live in Washington, D.C. There were a couple marriages. And they were reciting some different vows. And I was really touched by one vow. There was a young Indian girl and a young African-American boy, young man, young woman, who've been members of our community, really beautiful, as Prabhupada says, beautiful men and women, really beautiful young couple. So they were reciting the vows, and I never heard this one before. But one of the vows the husband took, he said, I shall always praise your beauty. And he said, and I will never speak harshly to you. And it really touched me, because I've been married about 25 years now, and starting to understand a little bit of female psychology is very difficult to understand. And I'm hoping I understand enough in this lifetime that I don't die still being curious, because I don't want to take another birth in that way out of that question. But understanding a little bit, you know, and realizing ladies are very attracted to beauty, differently than men are. Men are attracted to beauty, but ladies are so attracted to beauty. That's why, you know, the men, you see men, you know, like you throw, you know, like you get up, you grab a dhoti, you throw on a kurta, you go to the temple. You know, and it happens to have a red stripe with a blue shirt or yellow, you know, it's like you don't think about it. It's like a uniform. It's a different kind of psychology. You know, but I remember when I was a temple president and I had to go and buy the saris for the ladies. It was one of the more complicated tasks I've ever performed in my life. You know, because this one wanted pink stripes with such and such a... You know, I was trying to be a good president, wrote it all down, and, you know, it took like a day. And I never really did get it right. But at least I tried to buy extras. So if they go, that's not what I wanted, you know, there was still some hope in the pile. They could find others. So ladies are attracted to beauty. And are easily hurt when they're spoken to harshly, especially by a husband. But if a man doesn't know that, sometimes in his misunderstanding of what it means to protect his wife, thinks he's supposed to bark out orders like, I don't know what, like a guard dog or something. Like a drill sergeant. Like dogs protect property, right? In the West, they have a big fence and they buy a dog to protect the property. So they say, okay, I'm a husband. I'm supposed to be like a dog. Woof, 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 woof. Woof, 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 woof. I'm protecting you. Woof, 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 woof. See? So that's a misunderstanding of the principle. In the same way it's described like ladies, you know, men have, Prabhupada describes in the Bhagavatam, it says broad-shouldered mentality. The man wants to be strong. He wants to protect. You know, when a lady says something like, you'll never do it. You can't do that. Sita's husband doesn't do that. Sita's husband did this for her. Why can't you do that? It totally, you know, the man's energy just is totally, his enthusiasm is sapped. Because he wants to be strong in the eyes of his wife. He wants to be Krishna conscious and protect her as best he can. So the principle is, he's meant to serve her. He needs to, in that grihastha life, he needs to understand his wife's mentality a little bit. So therefore, this very interesting vow, praise her beauty. Woman likes to feel beautiful. Praise her beauty. Yes, you look very nice. And she's enthused to serve Krishna. And to not speak harshly, because that discourages her. So the same way for husbands, grihasthas in our movement, you know, they need to speak in a caring way, and they need to treat their wives in a caring way, and they'll blossom. Just the way the husband will blossom if there's a nice relationship with the wife, the wife will blossom if there's a nice relationship with the husband, And the children will blossom. So what's the ultimate principle? The principle is to care for one another and to care for the children and then care for society. But sometimes we see, even with our children, this is misunderstood. Sometimes we tend to think in our society, and it's talking a lot about household life, so I'm focusing on this. But I think it's also appropriate for those who renounce the of life, because 3/4 or more of the devotees in our movement are grihastha, so you need to understand how to preach to them. It has its advantages as a grihastha, and it has many disadvantages, so that's not the point. The point is, how do we understand how people can function effectively and become Krishna conscious? So sometimes we train our youth sometimes to think that the only noble path is renunciation. When I was a brahmachari in the early days, if someone got married, I don't think haven't heard this in 10 years, but it's important to know how sometimes we can misunderstand things. The term was, he fell down. He got married, he fell down. That's bogus. Grihastha ashram is one of the 4 ashrams for spiritual progress. It is a natural progressive step for most men. Some men will stay brahmachari and do great, and that's wonderful. And we offer our full pranams at their feet. Some men will go directly to sannyasa ashram. That's even more wonderful. And we fall at their feet because we need sannyasis who remind grihasthas, okay, you can be a little comfortable, it's okay, but the clock is ticking. Tick, 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 isn't it? Where would we be without sannyasis? We'd be finished. So, we're so indebted to sannyasis. And at the same time, we know Prabhupada was a grihastha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a grihastha. Most of the Mahajans were grihasthas. Most ISKCON members are grihasthas. Most of our children will be grihasthas. I was thinking about this morning, and I don't want to embarrass everybody here, but the fact is, each and every one of us had parents that were grihasthas. Shocking. Somewhat embarrassing, you might say. And moreover, our grandparents were grihasthas. Yeah, some sannyasis here are pointing out, yeah, hopefully they were grihasthas. Maybe Grihamedis, but we'll put that aside for the minute. But they were at least in household life. More better. So, again, what's the principle? That we should always think of Krishna, never forget him. Everything we do, we should do for him. And ultimately, we should learn to love him. It doesn't matter what our situation is. It's a noble path if it's connected to Krishna. And if it's not connected to Krishna, then ultimately it leads to depravation and rebirth. And, another example that comes to mind in terms of making everything focused on Krishna and social roles and understanding how to purify those and direct those to Krishna. Sometimes we hear, sometimes there's pressure on young men. In my era, there was pressure on young men. You have, the only noble path is the renunciate path. And it is the most noble path, but it's not the only noble path. And sometimes young men in our movement, they went away because they couldn't live renounced lives. They couldn't be brahmacharis and sannyasis for life, so they went away because they thought there was no choice. That was actually very wrong and unfortunate and very counterproductive. Because we didn't recognize, as they say, different strokes, or sometimes we Vaishnavize it, we say different shlokas for different folks. Different people have different natures. And one of the beauties of Prabhupada's movement is Prabhupada knew how to engage everybody. Someone was mentioning the other day, we hear about Prabhupada going to the Avalon Ballroom, which was so wonderful, and so many, the hippies and the young people, and they were on drugs and into illicit sex and so much nonsense. But Prabhupada went there and gave him mercy and taught them how to chant Hare Krishna. And not only that, but Allen Ginsberg was the one that did the chanting. And someone was pointing out the other day, Allen Ginsberg in that day was the most famous homosexual in the United States. An out-and-out advocate for homosexuality and every other kind of sinful activity. But somehow he liked to chant Hare Krishna, and he loved Prabhupada. And Prabhupada engaged him. And through him, so many young people were attracted. Now, it didn't mean Prabhupada agreed with what he did. Prabhupada was very strong against that those varieties of sinful activity. But probably here's someone who wants to be engaged in Krishna service, so okay, we'll engage him in a certain way. Didn't mean he made him a temple president. He didn't initiate him, but he figured out how to engage him. So sometimes another example we hear, you know, men, if you're not renounced, then that's you can't be a good devotee. That's not true. Now we have a more mature understanding of that. Similarly, even sometimes today we hear this, you know, girls should only cook and clean. Anybody ever heard that? Girls should only cook and clean. It's true to the extent that if that girl only wants to cook and clean, we should encourage her to cook and clean for Krishna. That's the only extent to which it's true. And if that girl wants to be an artist for Krishna, she should have full facility. If she wants to be a PhD for Krishna, a lawyer for Krishna, a doctor for Krishna, a temple president, at least in some parts of the world for Krishna, then she should be encouraged to do so. Otherwise, the same way those young men that had the culture was on their head, that if you're not a brahmacharya, you're not really a devotee, the pressure pushed them away from Krishna. That was violence. The same way with our young women, if we try to force anybody into something that's not their natural calling, if we don't understand, just like a household, you have three children, it's like having three seeds. You know, you put them in the ground, one comes up a banana tree, one comes up a papaya, one comes up a mango. You can't try to make the mango into a papaya or the papaya into a walnut tree. You know, the soul is there. They're going to have their propensities. A parent's role is to help that child fully blossom into what they're meant to be for Krishna. The role of a temple president, help that young brahmachari, brahmacharini, this, that, new grihastha couple, congregational member, old person, young, help them blossom into what they can be for Krishna. Not that sometimes parents, we all hear these stories, not just in our movement outside, so many problems. Parents have a desire, my child should be an engineer. So they try to force him into being an engineer. Maybe they want to be they're a talented lawyer. No, you can't be a lawyer, you got to be an engineer. Or they want to be a writer. No, you can't be a writer, you have to be an engineer. And they make their life miserable. So our society is not meant for making people's lives miserable. Our society is meant, as Prabhupada said, whatever talents, whatever abilities we have, whatever someone has, use it for Krishna. If we don't, then it's like the perversion of the sati rite. You can't force a woman to give up her life when her husband dies. You can't force a young man who should be a sannyasi to get married. You can't force a young man who should be a grihastha to be a brahmacharya. It's violence. So we should be careful about that. And our principle is shown by Prabhupada is everyone should get full facility in spiritual life, whether it's their men or women, Russians, Indians, Americans. Just like there's one young devotee girl was with Prabhupada one time. And Prabhupada said, I want all of my devotees to go and open temples. And she asked Prabhupada, she said, Prabhupada, from the back of the room, Prabhupada, even the girls? And Prabhupada thought about it for a minute and he said, yes, why not? That was our founder, Acharya. Does that mean every girl has to go out and open a temple? No. Does that mean every man has to go out and open a temple? No. But if we have the ability to do something, we should be encouraged to do so. And the ultimate principle Prabhupada's alluding to in the second half of the purport, when he explains that, a beautiful, beautiful finishing sentence here. In the ultimate issue, ultimate, that means there's nothing higher, the Siddhanta. In the ultimate issue, Prabhupada says, there actually is no material world. But when one forgets the service of the Lord and engages himself in the service of his senses, he is said to be living in the material world. So in the ultimate sense, if we see Krishna, if we remember Krishna, if we are knowing that he's the enjoyer and the controller and the best friend, as he states in Bhagavad Gita, then there is no material world. And I know a few days ago when we were having this international leadership sangha, it was such a wonderful experience. And for me personally, especially the first few days I was here, I had this experience because I get to travel a little bit. So I know a few devotees in China. I know some devotees in Russia. I know some devotees in South Africa and South America, North America and Australia. Been very blessed in that way. I don't know any from Antarctica yet. So I have to keep traveling. But, you know, at some point it was like, you know, see some Vaishnavas you haven't seen in some time. It was so joyful. And then you'd share something with them and then turn the corner and, oh, there's some other Vaishnavas you haven't seen. And then your heart would get even more inspired. And then you'd turn the corner and see off in this distance, oh, there's some North American Vaishnavas I haven't seen in a while. And, oh, there's so-and-so Mataji who's doing such nice preaching and get a chance to hear about her service. And there's so-and-so Maharaj. Oh, boy. You took sannyas last year, didn't you? That's fantastic. How's it going? Thanks for doing that for Prabhupada. It was just like waves of excitement, seeing all these wonderful devotees. So when we see the Lord, then Prabhupada says we're not in the material world. And how do we see the Lord? He's explaining the second part of this verse. We have to be free from lust in the spiritual world. In Vaikuntha, he specifically says, there's men and there are women and they're, is beautiful. What's the adjective you use? Extraordinarily beautiful. Both the men and the women, they're extraordinarily beautiful. So beautiful. English word like gorgeous. They're gorgeous. And they are attracted to one another. Just like we're attracted to one another. You see a devotee's attractive. Wow, Palananda Maharaj. I want to hear. What's he been doing? You know? When are you going to take sannyas, Prabhu? How much longer? We're attracted. We want to hear. It's very exciting. So we're attracted. But there's no lust. So whatever our situation is, the key is how do we become free from this lust that makes us want to force our conceptions on others or bark at our wives like a dog. That's a product of our wanting to be the controller, but Krishna's the controller. Or force a brahmachari that, you know, inappropriately force a brahmachari to either renounce or not renounce without trying to understand what's best for him. Or a wife thinking, okay, you know, I'm consciously or unconsciously belittling the husband who gets strength from her enthusiastic words, but manipulating or exhibiting her power by chopping him down. He chops her down, she chops him down. That's not Vaishnava culture. Wanting to have our children fulfill my desire instead of their natural abilities for Krishna. That's not really Vaishnava culture. Or minimizing, oh, you know, grihasthas are like this, or brahmacharis are like that, or sannyasis are like this, or women are like that. It's all material consciousness. The key is being explained here. If you're a brahmachari, I offer my obeisances to all the brahmacharis. Brahmachari ashram is so important to us. You go to temples where there's no brahmacharis, a lot of time there's no life. You bring a few brahmacharis in and everybody's like, wow, how come they're so excited? It's kind of like waking up from a midday nap. You're not quite sure where you are, what time of day is it, should I get up or go back to sleep? You know, where am I? Then the light comes on. Wow, kirtan. Just two brahmacharis. Isn't it? It's so exciting. Similarly, the swamis in our movement, where would we be without the sannyasis? I mean, there's so many grihasthas. The brahmacharis get so much life from the sannyasis. And the grihasthas get so much life from the sannyasis because they remind us what's the goal. And therefore, grihasthas' duty is to protect the sannyasis, help the sannyasis, serve the sannyasis, offer obeisances to the sannyasis because they're blessed. Sannyasis are blessed. Every sannyasi in our movement is blessed. And every brahmachari in our movement is blessed. And all the vanaprasthas in our movement, we don't have so many yet. We're not really quite clear what it means, I don't think. Yet to be unfolded exactly how the role of the varieties of vanaprastha. But it's a blessed situation. And similarly, the grihasthas. Grihasthas are blessed to be in Prabhupada's movement. So we're all here to get purified. We're all here to understand the Lord. We're all here to get inspired. We've got this chance now. We're here in the Dham. We're trying to understand Krishna better. We're trying to understand his representatives better. We're trying to become inspired in each other's association. There's so many training opportunities. The other day was the MI graduation ceremony. Then there was an MA graduation ceremony. Then there's the SMIS graduation ceremony or some kind of ceremony. Then there's the, what is it, something, the NIS, you know, it's all, it's about education and, you know, being trained to be good Vaishnavas. There's so many opportunities. And especially for those of us from other parts of the world, or those of us that travel sometimes, to come here to get inspired, as Prabhupada wanted. He wanted us to come to Mayapur every year. He wanted us to associate. He specifically told the GBC, come every year and discuss unity and diversity. So a little bit, that's kind of the theme of this class, how we are strengthened. We have unity, we're together, but diversity is also there. Just like I know all my illustrious Vaishnav colleagues that were born in Bengal, you have a particular capacity to relish rice rasa. Yeah? But even Bengalis, if it was only rice, there's the flavor is not fully there. Even though rice is very important, you know. So you need some diversity. You need some variety. So our movement is so enriched by so much variety. I mean, it's wonderful. You walk around here, and, you know, I'm just asking myself, wow, was that Russian they were speaking, or was that Croatian, or was that, what was it, what were they, I mean, there's so many languages spoken. I mean, it's so wonderful. And there's so many devotees from so many places, and studying so many things, and going back to so many parts of the world to give people Krishna consciousness. I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And we're still pioneers in this. Sometimes someone mentioned one of the meetings the other day. Sometimes you hear young devotees saying, oh, you older people, you're so fortunate. You were here in the early days. You know, all the excitement's gone. Everything's been done. It's like, well, hello, as they say in America. Duh. There's a few people out there that are not Krishna conscious yet. You know, we have, you know, the main temple of our whole movement's, you know, still a, you know, some pile, you know, some cement poles. There's a little work there to be. There's so much to be done. And so for generations, it's going to be exciting. Today is exciting. Tomorrow is going to be more exciting. The day after that's going to be even more exciting. We just have to open our eyes and see how exciting it is. And part of that is to take our eyes away from the bodily concept of life and to really understand the opportunity. So Prabhupada told us, come here, get inspired, distribute love of God, take it back home by Lord Chaitanya's order. So this is the most noble mission. Doesn't matter what country we're from, what ashram we're in, how old we are, how much education we have. This is the most noble task. We have the most noble opportunity. It's the most wonderful opportunity. And the fact is, we're sitting here. Some of us maybe, our ankles may be hurting, or maybe a little, you know, stomach issues from being in India. Or there may be some more serious physical or emotional or relationship issues we're struggling with. But compared to the world, we're very comfortable. Prabhupada's given us everything. Such wonderful people to associate with. Beautiful temples. I mean, who in the whole world gets up every morning and sits and talks about how to give up lust, anger, greed, and envy? It's like, what do you people do in the morning? Well, we get up and we spend a couple hours purifying ourselves through meditation on God. Then we do some joyful singing about God, and we dance with our fellow devotees of God. And then we spend about an hour talking about how the rest of the day and the rest of our lives, we can try to be selfless. And then we eat purified food that's free from violence that's been offered to God. And then we try to serve God in our occupations throughout the day and remind people about God. And then we come together again and start all over again. You know, what do you do? Well, I go to work, try to make my paycheck. And then we say, that's fine, we'll teach you how to do that and be happy while you do it. You know, it's just, I mean, we've got such gifts. We've been given such gifts. So the world is suffering. They're really suffering. Prabhupada, there's so many stories. Prabhupada's seen old people on a golf course and crying how they're suffering so much. Prabhupada underwent so much austerity. You know, as time goes by, we start to understand even more deeply. Prabhupada underwent so much difficulty for each and every one of us because he wanted to relieve our suffering. And then he gave that wonderful instruction. If you understand, if you have some sense of gratitude to me, he said, or to the spiritual master, if we have some little sense of gratitude, then we should try to repay that debt. And how to repay that debt? Did he say we have to, you know, put ourselves through so much suffering, or give so much money or do something we can't do. He said, no, you should just try to preach as I am doing. Try to help others. You know, devotees would have given it, would have and did, gave everything to Prabhupada. But he didn't take anything from self. He said, no, you just go and you try to help others the way I've tried to help you. That's all I ask. So what a great master we have. He's our master, he's our founder, Charya. We're understanding more clearly in recent years, he is the preeminent Siksha Guru for all of us now and for the entire future of the ISKCON society. We're very fortunate, and he only asks us to become Krishna conscious and give Krishna consciousness. There's one final story I'll end with. One time there was a group of book distributors, young brahmacharis, enthusiastic young men, were in a special darshan with Prabhupada, and they asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada pleases you most. And not unlike many of us, they were kind of thinking that, you know, he'd say something about what they were doing. You know, they were pujaris, that he would have said the best thing is to worship the deities, or if they're book distributors, the best thing is to do books, or if they were managers, the best thing is to manage. You know, Prabhupada, please say something to me. And Prabhupada did say something to them, but to their soul, not to their false ego. He said, what pleases me most is when you love Krishna. And that's an order and a vision and a goal for each of us. And we also know the best way to awaken our love of Krishna is to help other people love Krishna. And there used to be years ago, there was some senior devotees preaching in North America encouraging devotees to do Sankirtan. And they explained their realization, which was when we're starting to see Krishna, then when we actually preach and we're inspiring others, trying to bring them to Krishna consciousness, it's just like really going from Krishna to Krishna to Krishna. He's in this person's heart and that person's heart and that person's heart. And that's the vision that we all aspired for. That's the Vaikuntha vision. That's the Vaikuntha experience that's been explained here. Everyone's extraordinarily beautiful, extraordinarily lovable and loving, but there's no exploitation. That's the gift Prabhupada gave us. That's the gift he gave us in ISKCON. Now we just have to pray to fulfill that vision that Srila Prabhupada gave us. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. There's time for just one or two questions. Vasudev Prabhu.
Thank you very much, Prabhu. So we know, as you alluded to it, that Srila Prabhupada encouraged women to preach. We also know that he encouraged them to be housewives and stay home, be mothers.
And open temples.
But we also know that he did not encourage them to work. And considering that in ISKCON so far, ISKCON has not given to the world an example of having a lower divorce rate than in the world. So what is ISKCON's statement, an example? Is it to be home? And when a woman is a wife and a mother, she really, practically speaking, doesn't have much time for anything else? Or is it more important for women to be fulfilled in the way they choose to be? I want to do this, I want to do that. I would like to know what is ISKCON's statement, please.
I don't see ISKCON, so I can't ask him or her, but I can try to reflect a little bit. I can speak as a humble Vaishnava. I think, you know, as I kind of mentioned, I think the key is Prabhupada used the term psychophysiological nature, isn't it? So we have a psychophysiological nature. We need to purify that, sanctify that. Like, frankly, okay, my psychophysiological nature is quite degraded from the background I come, but I give up some of those gross things for illicit activities, etc., but try to direct the core, my nature, for Prabhupada. Like, I can say, like, I just, you know, personally, I don't do a lot of deity worship. It's difficult. I do some. I used to do more, but it's hard for me to do a lot of deity worship. You know, like, I can't stand with my feet in one place. I'm too distant from Satvaguna to be able to do that service. If somebody told me, I've got to do deity worship, like when I was a new devotee, they put me in the pot, they put me in the kitchen for about the first week. So I washed pots and listened to the ladies talking. That was my service. And after about 1 week, I went to the temple president. I said, Prabhu, if you want me here more than one more week, you got to change my service. Because between the pots and the ladies talking, I'm not going to make it. So they put me on book distribution. I got to run around parking lots and, you know, travel in vans and take showers out of buckets standing in snow. And, you know, that way I got my passion cooled down a little bit. But, you know, I had a particular nature and my spiritual authorities engaged me that way. So I think, you know, there's cultural things. And the ultimate, that's kind of my point, the ultimate cultural thing is what helps us become Krishna conscious. Like I helped put together with some very senior devotees, people much more experienced and knowledgeable than I am, there's a Grihastha seminar. And one of the things that I helped develop was roles of husband and wife. And basically, there's an hour and a half in that session giving examples of traditional Vedic-style marriages and not-so-traditional that have been successful in ISKCON and Shastric examples of more traditional, less traditional. And the conclusion of that whole session is, if the wife's happy walking 25 steps behind her husband, and he's happy, and they're chanting Hare Krishna, praise the Lord. You know, that's wonderful. And if he's happy walking next to her, and she's happy walking next to him in a respectful way, and they're becoming Krishna conscious, and they're enthused, and they're inspiring each other, and they treat each other in a proper way, that's great. So, you know, there's going to be some cultural variety. Prabhupada went to the West, and he told the devotees, go out and chant on the streets 8 hours a day. He brought them back to India. They went out and chanted. He said, how did it go? They said they loved us. They threw money. Prabhupada said, stop it immediately. Don't go out again. Our founder, Acharya, stopped street sankirtan in India. Everybody know that? Why did he do that? Because they thought we were beggars. Prabhupada said you have to stop that. So, I mean, how is it? So what was the principle? At that particular time and place, it wasn't appropriate. Of course, you know, shortly after, we now have wonderful chanting parties all over India and everywhere in the world. So we have to be a little bit thoughtful. So I think, you know, the key is, and frankly, you know, one reason we have divorce, since you asked that specific question, is because the young people are not counseled to talk to each other before you get married, because if he's thinking he's going to walk 25 steps ahead of her, and she's thinking she's going to be an equal partner, they're in trouble. Or if he's thinking we're going to have 14 children, you're going to stay home, and she's thinking I'm going to sell Prabhupada's books for at least the first 3 years of the marriage, they're in trouble. Or similarly, if he's thinking that, yeah, I'm going to be a pujari and you're going to get a job and make the money, which sometimes happens, and she's thinking, I want to be a pujari and you raise the money, they're in trouble. So, you know, there's different types of situations, but the real, you know, the principle of it all is that we have to see what's going to help us be Krishna conscious. Now, at the same time, you mentioned children. The parents got to figure it out. Generally, you know, women are more capable, especially when the kids are young, of, you know, playing that nurturing mothering role, and they're more naturally inclined to it. Not always, but it's got to be worked out with the ultimate goal of what's going to please Krishna. Okay? I think I need to stop because it's about 5 after, okay? Okay? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shishi Radhamadava ki jai, Sri Panchatapa ki jai, Lord Nishinganeh Bhagavan, Pallad Maharaj ki jai. Vaishnav Sangha ki jai, Gaura Premanandi.